Community Regional Affairs.
Vote to order. Let the record reflect it is 3:35 p.m. here on March 21st, Tuesday, 2017. We're in the Belts Committee Room of the Tom Stewart Building. Present today are Senators Hoffman, Senators Gardner, Senator Stedman, and Senator McKinnon, and myself, Senator Bishop. We have Ann Krackelberg on Senate Records. Good afternoon, ma'am. Ben Manley is our teleconference network operator, and John Manley, the elder statesman from my office, is here supporting myself. And I'd like to remind everyone to turn off their cell phones. And on our agenda today, we've got four bills up for consideration. Just for the record, if anybody's here, for HB 8, that'd be Representative Edgman's bill. It's going to be held until Thursday of this week. We're going to start with Senate Bill 77 by Senator McChicky, and then we're going to hear testimony and introductory remarks from Senator Hoffman and staff on Senate Bill 18. And if we get to HB 7 by Representative Price Tompkins, we will do so for not past the 5 o'clock hour. First up, Senate Bill 77. If you want to just come up, put yourself on the record, just give us a brief overview again, and then we'll see if there's any public comment in the room.
For the record, my name is Rachel Hickey, staff to Senator Michiki. Senate Bill 77 would expand the authority of second-class boroughs to exercise the local option of creating a non-taxable service area to provide emergency services along highway corridors. And this would be provided that no voters reside within the service area boundaries and no taxes will be levied for this service area. And the borough could then use a portion of its federal payment in lieu of taxes allocation to cover these costs. Every highway corridor traveler will be received these vital emergency response benefits with no additional cost to the state.
Thank you. We will open for public testimony at this time. We do have two people that would like to testify on the bill, Ahmed in Soldotna and Nikiski. And we're going to go to Roy Browning, Central Emergency Services in Soldotna. And if you put your name on the record, sir, and a couple of minutes of testimony there, it would be greatly appreciated.
Hi, my name is Roy Browning with Central Emergency Services, and I'm in support of Senate Bill 77. Currently, my department, currently in our service area that's supported as a borough-approved, voter-approved service area, we actually cover 61 miles of the Sterling Highway, and we provide mutual aid to some of the communities that this bill would create a possible service area using PILF funding. We currently provide mutual aid to the communities of Cooper Landing, Moose Pass, and Bear Creek when needed. However, there's times when the community of Cooper Landing or Moose Pass don't have the structure or the ability to provide their ambulance service. One of the things that our community deals with is our Sterling ambulance ends up going 20 to 30 miles outside of our service area to respond for their emergencies, and that puts a burden back on our community, our service area. So I'm in support of this, and at that point, when the service area is established, then the local communities of those areas affected can establish what type of parameters or training that we could assist them with, but we're unable to provide primary response for them because of our own call volume and our own dedication to our areas.
All right, well, good. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Roy. And next we'll go to James in the Nikiski Fire Services from Nikiski. James.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. My name is James Bates, and I'm the fire chief with the Nikiski Fire Department, and I too support Senate Bill 77. I don't need to repeat a lot of the things that Chief Browning spoke of. Most of you who have driven on the Kenai Peninsula know the large area that they're trying to protect with this service area. It is a unique way to to try to do it. We've seen the hazards and the accidents that can take place on this highway corridor. I'm sure there's other places in the state that could model after this. So we just wanted to be here if you had any questions from the emergency services folks, and thank you.
All right. Thanks for your testimony. Seeing no other questions from committee members, anybody in the room like to testify on 77? Senator Machicki, you got any closing comments?
No, thank you.
Public testimony is closed. All right. Senator McKinnon. You want to take it easy?
Right now.
Take a brief. Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill number 7730-LS0657-A from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Seeing no further comments, the bill passes. Next up, we're going to have Senate Bill 18. And here to introduce the bill, Senator Hoffman and his assistant. So
I'd just like to make some brief comments before Meriden goes over the sponsor statement. As everyone is well aware, in Alaska, energy and energy costs continue to be challenging, making Alaska a more affordable place to live. And I've worked extensively on weatherization legislation, alternative energy legislation, many other programs to try to address the high cost of living in the state of Alaska, particularly those areas of the state in rural Alaska and northern Alaska. The programs have been quite successful, saving Alaskans millions of dollars for thousands of Alaskans. And this particular piece of legislation, although those two programs spent millions of dollars to provide grants to local governments and to individuals that have resulted in 20 to 40% savings for those people of Alaska to make Alaska a more affordable place to live, this particular piece of legislation is optional legislation to put on our books an option for other areas to possibly look at and consider a borough to address the high costs of energy. It is optional. And it is aimed toward giving those areas that are interested the option in their toolbox of trying to address the high costs of energy. It is in no way trying to deter or derail any other forms of government that anyone else may be considering. And that is the intent that I bring this legislation forward as an option to, again, try to make Alaska a more affordable place to live. With that, I'll turn it over to Meriden for a sponsor statement, but that is a brief statement that I have regarding this particular piece of legislation and the intent that I have behind it.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Meriden Bolio, staff to Senator Hoffman. Mr. Chairman, I do have the sponsor statement that is directed at the CS. Should I just go through that anyway?
Okay. Please proceed. So, because now we've got a CS, and I think, I don't know if everybody's seen the CS. I know it's different than the original bill, so please enlighten us.
Okay. Senate Bill 18 would create a new class of borough, as Senator Hoffman mentioned. This borough, which we're calling the Energy Borough, would have the power, it would have limited powers and would be the power to tax a non-renewable resource within its boundaries and then use that tax revenue to fund energy projects that would directly contribute to lowering the cost of energy within the borough. As I said, it would have limited powers. It would be allowed to levy a property tax and impose liens to enforce that tax on property used to explore for, develop, or produce non-renewable resources. It would be allowed to enter into payment in lieu of tax agreements or PILT agreements with a taxpayer, and it would have limited bonding capacity to fund energy infrastructure projects in the borough and only borrow money for energy projects. It does not mandate borough formation, as Senator Hoffman said. It just adds another form of borough option in state statute, and that's basically all it does.
Okay, thank you. Questions from committee members?
Could you go over the, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Could you go over the fact that the taxing ability would be, what it would be limited to?
Yes, sir.
Because I think that is of great concern to many people, and that is an integral part of this particular piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, so the taxing ability of this energy borough would be only to levy property taxes on a non-renewable resource in within the borough boundaries. It would not be allowed to levy a property tax on individuals or recreation or any other personal property.
Okay, thank you. Senator Stedman?
Oh, just for those at home, I think we're working on version O, is that correct?
Well, through the chair, Senator Stedman, I have / version U as the CS, although it is not presently on the table.
Senator McKinnon, can I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill 18-30-LS0252 / U before the committee.
Thank you. This is the CS has been identified as our working document for here out until such time as. So, could you walk us through a sectional next, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There is a sectional included within your packet. If you'd like me to read it, or I can broadly, there's the first sections 1-6 deal with Title 14, which are the education statutes. And the reason those are in there is because this energy bill is not, this proposed energy bill in Senate Bill 18 is not proposing to change anything currently in the unorganized boroughs. And so those first sections show us they have to put it in and then take it out so that nothing changes as is in education funding statutes. So if that kind of skips over those first sections, and then
Section 8 and 9 is where we get to where the energy borough is in Title 29, which are the borough statutes. So Section 8 adds energy boroughs to the list of classifications. Section 9 also adds it to Title 29, just authorizes the incorporation and what the requirements are to meet that. Section 10 again refers to back to the education requirement that typically would say that it would have to form in a borough school district, but we're exempting that in this legislation, so taking the energy borough out of that. And then Section 11 lists the powers that I mentioned, which are the ability to levy impose a property tax on tangible personal properties, to explore for, develop, or produce non-renewable resources, to enter into the purchase agreements, to issue bonds to finance energy infrastructure projects, and then the power to have create an assembly that would oversee this borough government.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no objection, the committee substitute is adopted before the committee. So, all right, thank you for that sectional. Do we have questions from committee members? Senator Stedman.
Just wondering if you can help me just on conceptually. Normally you have a borough and you have property taxes borough-wide, and unless you have exempt property or deed-restricted property or things along those natures. So why would you want to exempt all of the property other than just the mine?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, it's the idea that we don't want to impose another layer of government on areas out there that maybe already don't have it or do have their own individual city or their own taxes, and it's specifically to tax an energy infrastructure to lower the cost, to then make more energy infrastructure to lower the cost. So that's just the
Senator Stedman.
Another one is, and it just so I understand it, so it's just within this borough boundaries, the tax revenue then would come from the mine to build electrical generation plants of some form, oil fired or natural gas fired or something, and then that energy then would be dispensed within this borough, and there'd be no other benefits outside the borough line, or how does that borough boundaries work?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I guess if the infrastructure went outside of the borough, then that would be another question. But yes, to use that money from the tax on the resource to create an infrastructure that would then help lower the costs of energy. So if it was some sort of energy generating infrastructure within the borough. I don't know if let's say it was a transmission line that went outside of the borough into another borough. I guess, however, that's done currently when they pass through different jurisdictions. But
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you. Meriden, can you tell me what if there's not a current borough? How does the borough come together then as an energy borough to establish its boundaries if there are multiple people claiming, as an example, with mining subsurface rights?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon. So the process is the process that's currently in statute, and an area would have to decide that they wanted to utilize this energy borough type. They would have to go through a public vote. They would, they would have to use all the things that are currently they have to do, which is decide for themselves, disseminate information, take a vote, go through the local boundary commission. Is that what you mean? And then, if they decided that's what they wanted to do for this area, that process would follow its way through. It's not a fast process. And then they would determine their boundary lines.
Senator McKinnon, follow up.
Would that process include then coming back before the legislature to establish the energy borough?
Senator McKinnon, through the chair, I believe there's the two kinds of processes. One's the petition process. I do think the petition process does come through the for legislative review. Then there's also the legislative process that where the legislature can initiate that. So there are two types, but yes, I believe it does still have to come back for legislative review after the local boundary commission does its thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Thank you, Meriden, for your explanations. Is it the intent of the sponsor to then come back and create a specific borough someplace?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, no, not at all.
And if I might just follow, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So if this bill is to pass, then nothing happens unless the people who are on the ground in a particular area say they want to do it.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, if I might. So I had some people that came into my office for something unrelated to this, but started to talk about this, and they were from the Kuskokwim area, I'm not sure exactly. And they had a lot of concerns and questions, and I've told the bill sponsor I have some questions that these people ask, and I told them that I'd be happy to ask these questions, but it's all kind of new to me, and I don't really understand how their questions, which relate to their specific area, fall in now to this bill if it's not taking in any, it's not forming a borough, it's just creating the possibility of somebody someday forming an energy borough. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Wagner, through the chair, and also I believe there are representatives from the region here that probably have some of those questions. But I know there have been concerns that there were folks in the region that thought we were trying to mandate a borough, which is not correct. But there are also other borough petitions out there up in the upper Kuskokwim and in different regions that are currently in the beginning processes of going through possibly forming a borough. Nothing in this bill, under current statute, not this one, but so nothing in this bill precludes that or stops that process at all. This would just be another option.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you. Just thinking about this bill, and there's a couple areas, I guess, that you know are pretty challenging in rural Alaska. One's energy, then is education. So on the energy side, how does PCE interact with this, and would it have any effect if in an area that is under PCE and if this was created? And then why would you want to exclude education, money being spent on education with the tax dollars available from the mine?
Senator Sedman, through the chair, with regards to PCE, and I probably should defer to the senator on that, but if the cost of energy came down significantly, then it's my understanding there would be less PCE dollars, which would save the state those dollars. And also with regards to education, there are no proposed changes to education, so you're correct that that funding still comes from the state, but if energy costs were lowered significantly, then that would be less funding that the state would have to provide to cover those costs.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
That's correct. There is a formula primarily based on three areas of the state that is an average used that is calculated whether or not people participate in power cost equalization or not, and if they fall below that threshold, they are not eligible for power cost equalization. And it is my intent somewhere down the road, maybe all areas of the state will have affordable energy and power cost equalization would not be needed. Energy costs continue to have the highest percentage of disposable income that people in rural Alaska spend their disposable income on. whether that be electricity, whether that be heating, whether that be snow, powering their snow machines, outboard motors, or cars. Many places are spending north of 40% of their disposable income on energy. And this is something that that I, as a legislator, have been working on for many years on very different programs. And I believe that every opportunity should be looked at to lower the cost of energy to make all areas of Alaska a more affordable place to live.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Other questions from committee members? See, we have some people signed up online to testify, and then we have people in the room to testify. So at that time, if there's no other questions from committee members at this point, I'm going to open the meeting for public testimony. And I'm going to go to sleep mute first for Lorraine. Are you there, Lorraine?
Yes, I am.
Could you put your name on the record, please? And if you could, kind of keep your comments to around 2 minutes or so, and then please proceed.
Okay, great. Thank you. My name is Lorraine Ignati. My home is in Sweetmeat, Alaska, and I'm concerned. As of now, I am in Wasilla. I've been here for maybe 6 years. I've been letting my kids go to school here. My oldest one graduated, and my youngest one is in middle school. I am concerned about this energy bill. It doesn't, you know, give us much information on, you know, what it means. Is this because of Donlin Mine? And if it is, and it's a possibility, I understand. It's a possible bill that's thinking about Foreman, and he's been considering this for many years, many past years. But I'd like to say, our people out there in the villages are struggling with jobs. There's no jobs out there. We've had schools that are shutting down. It's getting very difficult. And you're telling us that this energy bill would help with heating, and I'm not sure how the people are going to, you know, benefit from this because of their income. I know that if the mine comes up, you know, it'll have jobs maybe for 15 years or so, and everybody else will have to eventually find different jobs, and the communities will have to find other ways to support themselves. But I'd like to say I disagree with this bill. I don't support it, and put it on record. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Do you know what the heating fuel is and what the price of gasoline is for snow machines out in Sleetmute?
It's almost $350, I think, for a barrel. It's going up every year. It's getting harder and harder to get up there. And also, for gasoline, it's like $7 a gallon.
And when you're living in Sweetmeat, do you know how much of your disposable income you are spending on heating fuel and gasoline and electricity?
We use gas for snow machines to travel to get wood.
So, you know, I know that we wrote white papers on this, but the intent of this is try to address the same concerns that you're talking about. It is very difficult for people to live, you know, you understand, because you're in a...
Yes, and I live in a subsistence life.
But you're living in...
Off the land.
But you're living in urban Alaska now. And you are enjoying some very, very low costs compared to what you left when you were in Sleetmute. You know, you're paying less than $3 a gallon for gasoline, and electricity rates are probably one-third of what you were paying there. And this legislation does not say that Sleetmute is going to become part of the Energy Bureau. They would vote on it, but the intent is trying to... address the hardships that you are facing today.
That's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about how it's going to affect our community, how it's going to affect our people in the villages, because if it does, you know, and this mine is a huge project, and we understand that, but we are concerned about how our people are going to, you know, how do you say it?
So basically this is looking at, and the decision will be made in the future. This is part of the tool in the toolbox.
Yes.
The people of Sleetmute will vote on.
I feel like I need more information on this, because it is kind of...
And that information will be borough by borough decision when the boundaries and when that decision becomes before the people of Sleetmute, and they will decide how large the board is, the boundaries, and those issues. And it's unclear at this time, but as proposals are brought forward, then the decisions will be made. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, next we're going to stay offline, online, and go to Joanne Blackburn in Anchorage. Joanne, would you put your name on the record, please, and try to keep it to 2 minutes or so, and please start your testimony.
Yes, hi. My name is Joanne Blackburn. I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm concerned about what limited information I know about this bill. I believe that when the state says it is for trimming costs, what they mean is enlarging the costs exponentially for a private landowner, no matter where he or she may be, and abolishing them off of the property. I'm just wondering whether or not, is this a law that was written by international bankers? And if not, I'm wondering why the people who are affected never get to know about this until later.
Joanne, I didn't, this is Chairman Bishop, I'll look to the bill's sponsor, but let them answer the question, but I don't believe any international bankers wrote the bill.
Reviewing our maps, looking at our resources, thinking about flow of funds, certainly the private property owners, no matter where they are, could be very negatively impacted by receiving a large bill for taxes in an almost imaginary food type of borough. This needs to be explored. I recommend tabling this and then actually talking to people who are going to be affected. Once overlightly, not going to work.
Joanne, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Here's what we're going to do for those of us that are still in the room. There's nobody left online that I see other than some folks for questions. It's obvious that there's some misconceptions about what was originally introduced and what we have before us here today. So we're going to just keep with our public testimony, and we're going to leave it at that. And if you got questions, we'll take it up with the bill sponsor or myself of what I can answer after the meeting.
Mr. Chairman, the answer to her question is no.
Okay. So it is no on international bankers, Joanne, for drafting a bill. So with that, we're going to come back to Juneau. And we had Lamar Cotton signed up first in the queue. So if Lamar Cotton would come up to the table, please, and put your name and affiliation on the record, and please proceed with 2 minutes of testimony or so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Lamar Cotton, and I'm a consultant that's been hired by the Cusquin Corporation, who is three of their executives are here behind me, and they'll be speaking a little bit later. Just quickly, my background, I've been a borough manager in the Aleutians East Borough for 4 or 5 years. I worked before that for the city of Sandpoint King Cove. I was also, up to a couple years ago, the manager for Lake and Peninsula Borough. I've worked with the Deltana Borough Charter Commission when they looked at organizing a borough a number of years ago, and actually worked on a PILT with the Pogo Mine. And then lastly, I've been a member of the Local Boundary Commission a number of years ago, and then also as a supervisor for the Local Boundary Commission staff with Governor Knowles. I think the first thing I would say is I truly do appreciate the sponsor's concern about energy. He represents many of the communities I've worked in for the last 20, 30 years. And there's no question that the issue of energy, and particularly heat, since to a certain extent PCE does address electricity. I don't think that's in doubt, and I think it covers more than just Southwest Alaska and covers more than the Chulista area. And I know it's a tough problem. It's not going to be solved by one piece of legislation. So I don't want to come across like I'm knocking his objective to try to solve a tough problem. I took a look at the bill and talked to some people about it, and perhaps the state's going to say some things. And I'm not a lawyer, and I don't try to practice law without a license. But I think a couple comments. One is the idea of pulling out one industry and taxing them and them alone is obviously, I think it's questionable constitutionally and otherwise. We have no city or borough in the state that allows that, whether it's for gambling, or not gambling, but for recreation, for fishing, lodges, or anything else. We cannot segregate them out. In fact, for property rates, it has to be the same, whether it's commercial, industrial, or personal property. And I know there's some, or housing, rather, residential. And I know there's some exceptions with residential. I think the bill, if I read it right, is silent as to who is to own the assets for the money spent and debt issued on a project. Now, I realize there are instances when a municipality may issue debt or do either conduit financing or industrial bonds, at least they have in the past, and I'm not sure, and I'm not up on the law presently, but even that's tricky. And I think when you add those two, a tax only in one industry, which I think would face a constitutional challenge, if you will, I think it does sort of add to the uncertainty of where this goes. I know this bill is more than just about Donlin, but I think my comments would apply to any place, and that is if you're going to have a large mine, you are going to probably require as a response three things. One is you're going to have impact, which probably means you're going to possibly increase services, whether it's public safety, health, or infrastructure, along with possibly an increase in education and educational needs. The bill disallows, if it's inside of a third-class borough, and it can have multiple school districts within a third-class borough. It's not one school district, it's multiple. State continues to be the sole source of income. And if you have pressure, not only internally, but let's say the legislature cuts more or there's simply less money to spend, they have no way to raise money to address those issues. And they have no way to address the needs for infrastructure unless they go to the state. And I think that's counterintuitive when you have a large project. The other power that's disallowed is planning. You do need planning. Planning is not about zoning. Planning is not about taking away property. But it is a tool that every borough in the state has, every city that's first class or home rule, in or out of a borough, and then in some instances, second class cities. Why would you deny planning powers to an area that has a large infrastructure project on the way? So I think that approach, no disrespect to sponsors, does open the door for some sort of creative ways to cherry pick what services you don't have to do and also what type of taxes or taxpayer has to pay. I think that sets a bad precedent, not only in the sense of mining, but why would a standard be different for another area? Why wouldn't they try to have something else to be taxed and other things to be left off? I realize, for example, the Chilista area is not overabundantly wealthy on a per capita basis. I mean, I think that's not in dispute. And I know it would be hard for them to come up with money if they had to come up with the 2.65 mills without a larger project. But if you're going to take on education and pay the 2.65, the way our law is set up, it's one school district. Right now there are five school districts. And I think that may be a difficult change for some people. So so I think there needs to be another way to look at this. And I don't have a quick answer. We've all looked at this for years about trying to work with these problems. A borough does some things for some communities. Others, I think it's, I'm not sure there's been that much change. But I think for the issue statement that Senator Hoffman has a sort of the lead on this piece of legislation, I would urge to look at, for example, the Port Authority under Title 2935, for example. Is there a better way to do a mechanism to help finance projects, to expand the language in the Port Authority? And literally, I like local government, but it seems like this kind of change really does make major possibilities for structure for change. It may have short-term gains, but not really long-term on the best way to provide services in rural Alaska. I also think, and I don't have any great ideas of working with Alaska Housing or ADA, but it seems like they may be a better place to address some of these issues, to work with the communities on alternative energy. I think of it not alternative energy, but to use energy infrastructure. And I don't want to speculate whether it's a gas line or whether it's wind turbines or whether it's simply more efficient diesel generators in the communities, but it seems like there's got to be a different way than in effect, having a tax on the one mine only for one particular subject matter. So,
thank you for your comments.
Just one other comment real quick. Mayor, we used to work, we used to live in Sandpoint, same time I was working there, years ago. She mentioned about process. If the primarily the way boroughs been organized is, of course, you go to the local boundary, including this bill here. All roads lead through the local boundary commission. They have two approaches. One is local option, which means vote. Pretty much every borough has had a local option. Nobody says, hey, the best thing to make a decision on a tough issue is to punt it to the legislature. The other approach is the legislative review, in which the commission authorizes the petition to go ahead. They say, we accept the petition. And it's a legislative review. That, I don't recall any place having been done that way, but it is possible to do it that way. Maybe the Mandatory Borough Act did it that way back in 64. But
thank you for your comments. Next up, Senator Hoffman.
Just a response from me as the prime sponsor. the whole legislation is not targeted just on mining. It's on if there are non-renewable oil or non-renewable gas or any kind of resources that are non-renewable. So I think that argument does not bode well. The other is that the area is vast and covers an area much larger than the state of Washington. And the problem there in trying to set up another layer of government is daunting. And that is why this legislation does not propose to form another layer of government. In many respects, those services are being provided by federal entities. Health services by the Health Corporation. They have a housing authority. A federal housing authority. Housing is provided by housing authority. AVCP provides numerous programs, probably the broadest form of quasi-governmental entities. So many of those services that are being referred to are being provided at the federal level. And to put another layer of government on top of those ones is quite complicated and this is primarily putting out a proposal for the people to consider on leaving those systems alone, not figure out how they would interface, not trying to dismantle them, not trying to do anything regarding those other services, primarily being living the life they have without forming another layer of government. You know, many of those communities have three different forms of government in each one of those communities already, and it is quite frustrating for many of the people in those communities to deal with three layers of government, to try to lay another form of government on. I don't think it would be wise to a region that has some of the highest unemployment rates, some of the highest, the lowest health care factors, and many other problems. And if the profit corporation that you're working for has other ideas on how to lower energy costs, I'd be more than willing to listen to a profit corporation come forward with those ideas that can help the people of the region of Chulista, which the goal belongs to, to try to lower the energy costs for all of the people of that region. And that is where I am going to form another layer of government. And I'm more than willing to listen to all of the non-profit and profit corporations to address this issue.
Thank you. Next up we have Mayor Carey. Welcome. And please put your name on the record. And
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Maver Carey. I'm the president and CEO of the Kuskokwim Corporation. I'm also a shareholder of the Kuskokwim Corporation and Chulista Corporation. And for the record, I'm a relative of Senator Lyman Hoffman, who I have a lot of respect for. I thank you for all that you've done for our region, and I agree that energy in our region is a huge issue, and if I had an answer to solve it, I wish I could leave that as a legacy. Unfortunately, in this one area, I respectfully agree to disagree that this would be the option for us in this area. So what I wanted to talk about was the concern about forming another layer of government, which when you say borough, that is another form of government. So for me, I'm looking down the road, that looks to me like annexation. A borough has three mandatory functions, and there are currently 19 organized boroughs in the state of Alaska that have to perform these three mandatory functions. The first one, which is number one, is to provide additional education dollars to the school district. Right now, the school districts in the boroughs are receiving additional money. State still provides some funding, but assists with the state in lowering those costs. And then the borough's main function is provide additional education resources to one school district. And in our region, my villages are 10 villages, Upper and Lower Kalskag, Aniak, all the way up to Stony River. It's actually the same exact boundaries as the Kuspuk School District, which is 10 villages. The second mandatory function a borough must do is obviously raise revenue, tax. In our instance, in our area, that tax base would be dominant because, as you heard from Lorraine, who's actually one of our shareholders and board members, there are no jobs in the region. And the third thing a borough must do is provide planning services for the villages. And my main concern with this bill is that the bill is doing one part of planning and not providing other planning, and in addition not providing any additional revenue sources to the school district. And as Lamar stated, there are five or seven school districts within the Chulista region. So one of the things that I brought today, because I've been doing, I know way more about boroughs than I ever wanted to know. We hired Lamar about 2.5 years ago, and we actually went out to our 10 villages, our region, and we traveled there 2 to 3 times, sometimes at lunch, sometimes in the evening. Some people worked, some people didn't. And we started educating ourselves on what a borough is. And at first, they were adamant about not wanting another form of government, and we stated that if we don't do it, someone else will do it for us, and then we will have no say. So what I got today was copies of Model Borough Boundary Report that was done by the DCRA in the 1980s. And the reason why the report was put together was because there was larger boroughs that were trying to annex smaller boroughs. And so I put a lot of time and effort into putting this report together. Lots of hours, hundreds of testimonials, lots of meetings in the region, and the report was put together so that the local boundary commission could have some sort of study to use in the future for the different types of model boroughs in the region. I'll hand this out because in the Chula region there was actually 3 boroughs that were recommended. Cusbuck Borough, Lower Kuskokwim Borough, and the Lower Yukon Borough. So three different types of boroughs. Is my time up?
You're getting close.
Okay. One thing that we've done is we went out to our communities and formed a steering committee, had Lamar help us. There was lots of rumors flying around, who's going to get taxed, all the questions that we have about SB 18, and we said, okay, let's bring you in. We got 2 representatives, shareholders and non-shareholders from each of our 10 villages, brought them in for 2 sections, and they actually wrote a draft charter for the Cuspuck Borough. And they said, let's sit it on the shelf, because Donovan right now is in its permitting stages, and they're not going to make a go, no-go decision until possibly the year 2020. And they were adamant that they didn't want to form a borough unless there was that tax base. And of course, within the borough charter, they got really creative. One of the very interesting things that we did for planning was they wanted to keep the borough staff small and funded the dollars through the tribes and the cities so that the cities can then hire the local people, provide employment. They know what projects in the region that they need to have done. And so that, to me, was a very exciting piece. In addition, we talked about several items that the school district would increase because the Cuspuck School District has been cut heavily. They talked about cultural issues that they would add. They talked about more recreation items that they would add. We just went down a gamut of lists of providing additional education in our region.
Thank you. Okay.
I have one question.
Sure.
What is the population of those 10 villages?
It's about 1,500.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, next up we have Ms. Whiteman. Is that right? Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Welcome. And put your name on the record, and I'll start. And if you go over a little bit, that's fine. But we'll just kind of keep.
Thank
to
you,
the
Chairman.
Part.
And committee, for the record, my name is Kasia Whiteman. I'm representing the Kuskokwim Corporation today. I've only been in Alaska a couple years, but I've been about 20 years of public policy with tribes and local government experience with me. So while this region is new, the idea of public infrastructure and policy is not new. Earlier, Senator Stedman referenced that really two of the big issues in Alaska are education and energy, and those are the two I'm going to give a real quick synopsis on today. Recognizing the noble intent of Senate Bill 18, I think instead of lowering energy, this is going to have huge impacts on education. And it may not change the law, but it's certainly changing the precedent. Right now, local education contributions from boroughs, excluding first-class cities, exceed $450 million a year. So this gives an opportunity for boroughs to opt out. Worst-case scenario, I can't envision happening, but say Anchorage, where I live, decides to reclassify and become an energy borough.
The state's now on the hook for an additional $200 million a year. Also, this really cripples the local communities who want to become self-sustainable and who want to give local contributions. This energy bill doesn't give those local communities an option. And Senate Bill 18 certainly doesn't require consolidation. It actually allows for energy bureaus to have multiple districts or REAAs within the area. But it opens the door to change the precedent. So potentially you could be looking at expanding the six Chulista borough or the six Chulista districts into one unmanageable, unrealistic school district to manage. Probably not a good thing for local schools in the Chulista area. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you're allowing multiple districts within one borough, changing the precedent. Again, I understand that you're not requiring the change, but you're opening this statewide issue of education dollars and of multiple boroughs or multiple districts within a borough. Just things that I hope you consider today. And really one of the underlying issues is we keep hearing that there's the potential to build a pipeline. And not referenced in the bill at any point, but we've heard it. It's referenced in the NuVista energy plans put out by Chulista, the regional energy plans, calling it a game changer. Here's the possibility. We can take the gas line from Donlin Mine down to Bethel and lower the cost of energy. It sounds good. I've spent this past couple months working with regional energy plans, the Alaska Energy Authority, local energy experts, and the reality is the numbers don't make it feasible. Even the Northern Economics, who prepared this study for the Alaska Energy Authority, issued a report in 2016 saying, don't bring natural gas to Bethel. It's not feasible. That report was essentially commissioned by the state via the Alaska Energy Authority. It referenced several places in rural Alaska that LNG and natural gas do not work, and it specifically mentioned Bethel. To run this pipeline down the river, you're running into environmental issues, topographical issues, subsistence concerns, and you're looking at about a $400 million price tag to take a pipeline from Donlin to Bethel, and you would service less than 10,000 people. Running the numbers, working with energy experts, again, we evaluated usage, we evaluated efficiency, amortization, construction cost, not including offtakes, not including processing for gas. And the reality is, even if the natural gas were free when you put it in the pipeline, it would not be cheaper than running diesel right now. Thank you.
All right.
Senator Mr. Chairman, just a comment. This legislation was not introduced to decide what form of energy would be utilized, not even a gas line, whether it's down the river by tankers or distribution lines of electricity or building a bigger energy plant there at the mine. All of those issues and the numbers would have to be run by that board, and they would decide what those options are. And it was not in consultation with NuVista that this whole plan was put together. It's something to try to address the high costs of energy, and in no way or measure was it contemplated to consider any specific project that has been discussed.
Thank you. Next up, we have Andrea Gusti, I believe. If I didn't say that right, you'll correct me when you put your name on the record. And welcome to Community and Regional Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Andrea Gusti, and I am the Vice President of Corporate Affairs for the Kuskokwim Corporation, originally from Aniak, which is on the Middle Kuskokwim River within the TKC region and within the Chulista region. I just want to speak a little bit about SB 18, and it is a statewide bill with statewide implications, but we continue to talk about it from a Chulista standpoint, from a Donlin Gold standpoint, because that is our region that would be affected should this bill be allowed to move forward. Essentially, we feel SB 18 would tie the hands of our region. It was mentioned earlier that the population of the TK3 region is about 1,400, 1,500 people, and that's, you know, on a good day when everybody's in town. And when it comes to a vote of creating a new type of government, and this is an energy borough would still be a form of government that would be governed by an assembly elected by the people. It would go to a vote of the region that would be looking at forming a type of borough. And at a, in a public vote, our region of 1,400 people loses to, you know, the Kuskokwim metropolitan area of Bethel every time. And so that's why, one of the reasons that we're so concerned. If Dahlman Gold does decide to move into construction operations, if they make it through permitting, our region has that mine in its backyard. We would arguably have some of the biggest impacts from that mine in terms of infrastructure needs, in terms of providing services to additional people that the mine would bring in. And we feel that SB 18 would tie the hands and tell the residents in our region that those other things that may be important to them, water and sewer, education, all the things that a real borough, you know, a borough that is in current state statute would be able to provide local contributions for, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters would be energy, infrastructure, and projects. And there are simply too many other needs in our region and in other regions of the state, I think, that SB 18 essentially ignores. There's no question that Senator Hoffman has done great things for our region, incredible projects, and he, like us, we wanted to be able to do something to address the high cost of energy in the Chulista region, in the TKC region, and in other areas of the state. But this bill, we feel, is just not the way to do that. The Chulista area is simply too big, and this bill would allow for a energy borough to be written along regional native corporation lines. The Chulista area is 56 villages large. That's a massive borough, and as Maver Carey mentioned, those model borough boundaries the state looked at suggested that the Chulista region of 56 villages would perhaps be best served by three distinct boroughs, and combining them into a single energy borough of 56 villages would simply be unmanageable, and you lose that local voice. You guys know better than anyone, the bigger a government gets, the less the individual voices matter. And so we just want to make sure that the Middle Kuskokwim area that would be most impacted by a major infrastructure project on the horizon would not be able to address some of those needs and would be solely reliant on state and federal money coming in, and it's dwindling, would be relying on that and would not be able to address some of those concerns themselves through a traditional borough.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no other person, anybody else online or in the room, we're going to set this bill aside. Senator Stedman?
Before we set this aside, I'm just, as we've been listening to the testimony, and Alaska is vast, Mr. Chairman, and different issues. Referenced earlier, the Senate district decided to state of Washington. 90 communities, Senator Hoffman's letterhead here. But taking it to the south side in southeast, would the timber industry qualify for this? Could you then, with Prince of Wales, enact an energy bill, tax the mills or the one or two potential mines, and then leave the rest of the infrastructure costs back to the state? I mean, that's kind of a concern. If we do an energy borough in Prince of Wales, which is in my district, that they'd have the possibility of doing an energy borough, tax whatever developer is, if it's a sawmill or a mine, and then not help with school financing and other issues that the cities and boroughs have to normally face. And there's a And there is a mix on that island of restricted deed and trust property also. So I'm not talking about the, you know, the issue of trying to tax that, because that's a not in question. But there's a lot of other property, so maybe the Senator Hoffman could help me with that a little bit. I'm just kind of struggling with the how broad the concept actually is.
Well, I would say the timber is renewable, because you cut it down, it grows back. You take gold out, it doesn't grow back. You take oil out, it doesn't, you know, it may come back to billions of years, but timber is, I would say, is renewable. And the comparison of the Chulista region to the size of the state of Washington is true, but that is not my Senate district. That's only a portion of my Senate district. My Senate district goes way beyond that, halfway to Japan with the Aleutian Islands. So the concept of that was said by the other testifier, that, you know, we're broadening this to a larger area. But the fact of the matter is, it's not expanding government for all of those areas. It's compressing it to one issue, and the issue here is whether or not we look at energy in this region of the state. I would venture to say, if nothing happens else happens in that region, nothing is going to change. There will never in the next 30 to 50 years be a vote to have a borough in the lower part of this district. But there is the opportunity here to use this to form a borough to help the people of all of the region address the energy costs. This resource, after all, and there may be others, but this resource is owned by the Chulista people. And that number, I would say 15,000 people, compared to the 1,500 people that are in this one region. And there have been people that from the region that have come to me and said, how can we best utilize this resource to benefit all the people of the region? And this is not mandating anything. You know, I think it was said that this legislation ties the hands of people. I would say that it frees up an opportunity, one additional tool in the toolbox that can be considered by the region to address one of the largest concerns of all of the people of that region. And that is, in the past, we've had, when costs soared high, we've had people from, I think it was Marshall, that said the costs were running so high they had to decide whether or not to feed their children or heat their homes. And, you know, maybe that is not the case today, but there is still a high burden placed upon how individuals with limited incomes spend their small portion of disposable income. And this will bring that debate to the region, and whether or not they want to consider this alternative. And it is just an alternative. We're not going to solve how education is funded in rural Alaska. We're not going to solve how the planning problems are in Western Alaska. Many of those issues are planned for and done very well regarding housing, regarding health care, regarding all the other services that the Association of Village Council Presidents deal with millions of dollars. But this is just putting one tool in the toolbox that people should not be afraid of, should not be afraid of the change that it could potentially bring, but should be embracing it as an alternative to make their lives and their children's lives and their children's children's lives more affordable for them to live. And that is the only intent behind this legislation, to provide an opportunity, to provide a choice, to provide something in the toolbox to address it for a larger population that many people say has been forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other testimony,
online or in the room, we're closing public testimony, and we're going to set this, public testimony is closed. We're setting this bill aside. And next up, we have HB 7, and here to introduce that bill is, let me see. I see Rep. Christ Tompkins' staff is here. I do not see the representative in the room. Is that correct? Okay. So, all right, we're going to go to HB 7.
Committee.
Thank you. Okay, welcome.
Hi, I'm Alicia Norden, intern for Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins, and I'm going to go ahead and pass along his apologies. He's currently in state affairs, and which he chairs, and he hasn't been able to find a time to step away.
I know you put your name on the record, but could you do it one more time for me, because I didn't hear your last name.
I'm Alicia Norden.
Thank you. And put your name on the record, sir.
And I'm Reed Megbans, also staff to Representative Christ Tompkins, and I'm here to back up Alicia.
Okay. Well, Alicia, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Currently, it's illegal to take a photo or a photo with yourself with your marked ballot. These are commonly known as ballot selfies. And it's currently illegal here in Alaska. HB 7 just aims to legalize the ability to take and share a photo of your marked ballot. And with that being said, if you look at Section 1, this was adopted in House Community Regional Affairs after members of House State Affairs raised concerns of ballot photo sharing in the polling place or within 200 feet of the polling place, and that's a physical display. So if you were to take your phone and take a photo of your marked ballot and then go into the voting line and physically display your photo of your marked ballot to someone within that line, that is illegal, and Section 1 just confirms that. So historically, ballot photo sharing has been prohibited to prevent voter intimidation or vote buying, but as times have changed and we have social media and the internet now, and speaking as a millennial, sharing photos is just a way to communicate or share what you like or what you enjoy. And taking a photo of your marked ballot or taking a photo with your marked ballot is just another form to communicate, whether that be showing support for a candidate or a cause or just simply asking others to vote. This law is not heavily enforced in Alaska. There haven't been any court cases. Courts in Indiana and New Hampshire have ruled the banning of ballot selfies. They've ruled that it violates the First Amendment. And also, forgive me, I'm a little sick right now, too. HB 7 would also provide the Division of Elections some relief. They receive plenty of phone calls across the state of Alaska every election asking if ballot selfies are legal or illegal, and HB 7 would give them the ability to actually say, yes, ballot selfies are legal, you are welcome to take them. We did have a floor, we did have a member of the House introduce a floor amendment. The amendment it provided tighter language in prohibiting someone from forcing someone else to show a photo of their marked ballot. It was voted down in the House. We were indifferent towards it. It just closed some loopholes, but we're more than happy to have this further explored here in the Senate.
Okay, great. Questions from committee members? Senator McKinnon.
Could you please point inside of the bill specifically where it allows a selfie?
It's section 3.
That's for a voter who needs assistance.
It's number 2, so B subsection 2, or, yeah.
Take a break, please. Back on the record, I have no further questions for the bill sponsors here today. Anybody else? Seeing none, we're going to set this bill aside and we're going to adjourn. Let me open for public testimony. I skipped a step and I have nobody for public testimony. So we're closing public testimony, and we're going to set this bill aside. And having no further business, we are adjourned at 4:50 p.m.